Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. I'm Hannah Forden here at the Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. Thanks so much to Good Food for having us here today and to the Julia Child Foundation for making our On Tour coverage possible. I am here with some very lovely friends. I have Sam Suchoff from Lady Edison and David Yord from Philosophy Foods. And tell me a little bit about how the two of you work together.
Oh, well, that's an evolving story.
Involving and very involved and deep.
Yes. I got introduced to Sam three years ago, maybe, from a mutual friend in North Carolina, Bobby
Zimmerman.
And he told me there's this ham that you have to try. It's in North Carolina. It's nowhere else. And he needs your help. And so they sent this Lady Edison ham to our offices in New York. We opened it up, started carving it, and all of a sudden our whole office smelled like fish sauce and anchovies. And everyone, like, what is that? And so we tasted this ham, and it was like something we've never had before. And we've sold tons of Iberico ham in the past and prosciutto, and it really blew us away.
Awesome.
And so we started distributing his ham in New York, and then we started selling more than he could produce, and so he started producing more, and just last year we ran into a situation where we needed to work more tightly together and actually become partners, so we could kind of finance the buying of his pork legs for 18 months, and now we're where we're at. And it's grown quite a bit and successful. And now we have hams to sell, which is why we're here today.
Awesome. And Sam, you were connected with us through our founder, Patrick Martins. Tell me a little bit about the genesis of Lady Edison.
So I guess Lady Edison started about 10 years ago. I opened a small barbecue restaurant. Actually, it was a place called, it was called The Barbecue Joint. I'd worked there. I'd learned, you know, they made their own bacon and sausage, and so I'd worked there for a year and a half and was off doing other things when I found out that they'd gone out of business. And in the meantime, I had kind of started doing consulting with NC Choices. There was this project looking to help bring together local farmers, hog farmers and beef farmers in particular, to find someone to basically, I don't have, not conglomerate, to...
Like sort like a guild or some sort of support system?
Yeah, to basically a middleman, someone who would buy from multiple people and then sell it under one brand. Anyway, so I was consulting with them on what they could make, you know, the part they could sell the loins, what could they make with the parts they couldn't sell. And so I met all these farmers, and then I got a call that this barbecue restaurant was going out of business. So I came in, talked to the former owners, and they're like, yeah, go for it. So I kind of took over what they were doing, but with the spin that we were buying whole hogs from these local farmers. And then over time, you know, we started throwing the whole animal in the smoker, North Carolina barbecue. But over time, we realized the loin was the least valuable part for us, most valuable part for other restaurants around us. So we started parting it out, basically. Mm. And one of the parts that got parted out were the hams. So we started, actually met Rufus Brown from Johnson County Hams maybe 2.5 years before I started the pig. And he ran Johnson County Hams. He's the third generation of his family to do country ham. And he was able to work into his schedule curing hams for me. Like once a month, I would send up a batch of hams. And this was just a little project for the restaurant and for friends. But you know, as people tasted the ham, more people wanted it, and it got into some, you know, pretty special places. And yeah, and then I got hooked up with Dave, and he really got it into special places, and we realized that we needed to put more hams up. And so we started at 3 pigs a week, and now we're doing 32 pigs a week.
Wow, that's a lot of growth.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, because I think for folks who are outside of the industry, what distributors like Philosophy Foods do can be a little bit opaque. So David, I'd love to hear about the philosophy of Philosophy Foods and how it is that you find and connect with makers and what you're looking for.
Sure. Well, we're even more opaque than most other companies. Nobody understands what we do. But in general, we work with about now 7 producers. We're partners in 2 of those producers. And then the other 5 we import from Spain. So we generally market only to distributors, whether it's an imported product that we have or a domestic product that we're partners in. So it's a little bit of a different concept than just being a regular distributor. But what that does provide is efficiencies of scale, where we can come to shows like this and do the fancy food show and show 7 different products and kind of divide that cost between the 5 or the 7 different producers. And it makes things easier, although we do like need to always step back and understand we have to focus on each different brand individually. So far it's working, but my wife Carrie and I have kind of, you know, made an oath to keep it focused and more on quality than trying to grow bigger. We want to be the best, not the biggest. So
yeah.
That's what we do. As far as the types of products we're looking for, in different facets, we've been in the industry for a long time, so we have a lot of relationships. It has to be, in our opinion, best in class or as good as anything else out there is our first criteria. And then, you know, both parties need to want to work together and have a need to work together. So it's not like we have a preconceived notion of what we want and then go out and find it. It usually happens organically.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like, you know, there are certain things that you taste them and they're unforgettable.
That's
and
right.
That was your experience with Lady Edison. So we're here at Good Food. What are you the most excited about sharing from Lady Edison? And feel free to expand on the other brands you work with, David. What are you excited to share with folks here at Mercantile?
Well, I mean, these shows are fun because every time, you know, we have a nice ham on the stand, and every ham is different, which is interesting. You know, it makes it hard for some venues to deal with, but it makes it perfect for others. You know, it's a really it's fun and interesting and has character. And so, I mean, one of my favorite parts about these shows is opening up the hams. Although I guess it's my favorite when it turns out great. We always have a backup ham because, I mean, these hams are wild. I mean, they are, you know, aged in very warm, very humid temperature, and that's what allows it to kind of grow that funk. Yeah, I mean, the ham's always exciting. I've been working on a collaboration with the Smoking Goose, and so I've got some Nduja that we've been doing. I've been sending pork bellies to Indianapolis to Chris Ely, and he grinds them, mixes them, cures them, ages them, sends them back to me, and that's been really good. Mm-hmm. I haven't even tried it yet. We sent him a bunch of country ham scraps, and he did a what he's calling a ham belly sausage, and so that's going to be at the Good Food Original table. It's a new project, I think, that they're working on trying to kind of help incubate products that they think are great, get them distributed within their network of merchants. So I'm excited about that.
So I'm curious to hear about working on these new collaborations, because it sounds like your history is really focused on ham. So what is it like kind of branching out and doing these new lines with other products?
I guess it comes pretty natural to me. Although, I mean, the ham was definitely like the first project. I mean, that in itself is a collaboration. The ham, again, is cured out by this guy, Rufus. And what's special about it is not that I was like, hey, can you kind of tweak the recipe to come up with something new? I mean, what's special about the ham is that it's a third generation. And so kind of in that respect, I have a very hands-off approach. And same thing with Chris. I mean, he's making amazing product. What I have to offer is what I think is the best pork, you know, North Carolina, maybe the United States has to offer, you know, from
Sam's
real farmers.
He doesn't tell you in North Carolina. He makes his own hot dogs, sells them at the farmer's market every Saturday. A pork pastrami that we can't sell nationally because it's done in North Carolina in a state-run facility. But Sam has chops.
I make a few things.
Just a couple.
Just a couple. But, I mean, the core of everything that I do really is the pork. I mean, the quality of this pork is just unbelievable. It just opened up a little deli next to the barbecue restaurant, and we make our own bagels, and we've been selling so much breakfast sausage. And, a breakfast sausage is a very simple sausage. We don't have any funky ingredients in it. It doesn't have maple syrup. It's just a straight up breakfast sausage. But I mean, the richness and the just how clean the fat is. I mean, that with the ham you can taste it. With the sausage you can taste it. With the andouille you can taste it. That's what excites me.
Yeah.
The quality of the pork, that's what gets me going. And then finding other people who appreciate that and want to bring something to it. I love the camaraderie
that happens here. Like, I love that all the charcuterie guys are buddies and all the cheese people are buddies. It's really amazing to see that it's not a mindset of competition at all. It's kind of like, oh, have you tried this thing? It's amazing. Like, have you tried Charlito's? Have you tried Lady Edison? I love that so much. Let's hear more about David. What are you excited about sharing? And I'm curious, as someone who is here telling the story of multiple brands, the role that, like, interacting with buyers and also, like, retail customers has in how you understand and promote everything.
For me, it's easy because Carrie, my wife, does all of it, and I just stand in the background. So that's my contribution. But as far as being excited, say in this political or economic climate, I'm very happy that the Mercantile's opened it up to some international sponsors as well. And I think Ethex, the Spanish commercial division, is going to rent a table next year. Because, you know, we've been hit with tariffs this year, and I know that it's two sides of a coin with that. But really, I think artisan producers have kind of banded together even internationally, and I think in this day and age, as the industry has grown, it's hard to really parse out super high quality product done well. And while a lot of these producers are now forced to try to ramp up their production and sell to larger clients, you know, some of these larger clients don't understand that they're not large producers, and they can't give free fills, and they can't, like, give discounts every single day. So my fear becomes that some producers might compromise. So for me, it's, whether than being domestic or international, it's those producers that will not compromise on their product, no matter if it hurts their pricing or it hurts their integrity. They stick to what they believe, and for me, that's the most exciting thing.
And this is kind of a question for both of you. I mean, going back to that, I think making sure that people who are buying these incredibly special, incredibly labor-intensive, time-intensive, good food products, how do you make sure that the story is being told in a way that, like, the value is really being appreciated, and the amount of time and effort and history behind these products is being appreciated? Because obviously there is price resistance, and that's kind of part of this journey that everyone here is going through collectively, is educating consumers, educating buyers. So from both of your perspectives, like, how do we do that?
I'm very fortunate. The co-op, all the members are animal welfare approved. And so that's a certification done by A Greener World. They do a lot of outreach, education. They help. There are lots of labels out there these days, and it's hard to know what they mean. So many of them are really meaningless. So we've kind of gotten to the point where labels don't mean anything because so many of them mean nothing. But AWA, Animal Welfare Approved, Global Animal Protection. I mean, there are labels out there that mean something. And I think kind of standing behind those labels, or not just standing behind them and letting them do the talking, but, in forms like this, explaining that they really are good. They're not just there to help the consumer. They're there to help the farmers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I've never really felt the urge to get into the education side of things, educating the consumer. I idealize, not believe, but that if the product is great, it'll talk for itself. I mean, I've come to realize that it's not as simple as that. I mean, there needs to be a translation a lot of times from what the product is to what the consumer is looking for. And that's what labels do. That's what marketing does. But as far as what I do, I step back. I let the ham do it. I let
interviews on Heritage Radio help as well.
Yeah.
We do our best to spread the word about the tastiest things out there. I guess, David, same question for you. And you're dealing with multiple brands of, what mainstream markets would kind of consider luxury products. So how do you tell those stories and communicate to consumers why everything you sell is so special?
Well, telling it's no problem because we're so passionate about the products. Getting the structure to be able to afford to go tell the product as much as possible is what we built our whole business around. So that's a challenge every day, but we tackle it. And for us, the biggest thing is working with the right people, and our focus is selling to like the Anahatachites of the world, who help us out with the ham, and smaller distributors or specialty shops that really care about the product. We're not here to go to sell the big box stores just so we can sell the hams. Maybe that will come eventually if they see it in the right stores. But for me, it's also very important to support the people who started this industry. And in Brooklyn, you see a lot of little cheese shops are struggling, and even in Chicago, major one closing. And so I feel it's our responsibility to support those people even more than the bigger box stores, because they're the ones who are going to be telling the story of the consumer. And if that disappears, we're in a lot of trouble.
That's a really, I like that you mentioned that, because I think we talk a lot about how retailers can support makers, and I like hearing that, like, really, like, this is a circle, this is a whole community, and like small retailers need the support of the brands like you to help give them the tools they need and elevate their businesses.
Yep.
Sigh. This is when we're gonna sigh. So what have you tasted since you've been here at Good Food that has made the light bulb go off?
We're right across from, is it Tulip? Tulip Tree. Their cheese kind of blew my mind. It tastes like the most delicious fresh milk you've ever had. I don't know how to describe it. Obviously cheese is made from milk. I think I knew that before I tried their cheese. But I really knew it after I ate their cheese. I mean, it's, they have a blue, they have strong flavors in their cheese, but there's this amazing, clean, milkiness to their cheeses that I've, you know, maybe like with like with like Italian like buffalo milk cheese, sometimes you get that. But it, yeah, that their cheese really kind of blew my mind.
Nice.
I haven't got to walk around, but Rustic Bakery gave us a box of crackers to use for the Andouille, which I just eat the crackers usually by themselves. So Scott's a friend of mine, and I love their product, which they're local to here as well.
Nice, nice. I just was chatting with Adam from the Far West Cider Company and got to taste some of his ciders. So that was my most recent taste. So it's standing out in my mind. It's really good. Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap up, but thank you guys so much for sitting down to chat and keep up the amazing work and making the world more delicious. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And just real quick, where can our listeners find Lady Edison and also the full range of Philosophy's offerings?
Okay, you're putting me on the spot.
No, I mean, I'm sure they can find information on your website.
They can find www.philosophyfoods.com. And then your Lady Edison is LadyEdisonPork.com.
LadyEdisonPork.com. I think we just had a special power moment. Although I see we've got red lights. Does that mean we're still going?
Oh, we're running on battery, so we don't need any. Oh, here we go. Lights are back on.
All right, okay. We're back.
Well, thank you so much, David Yord from Philosophy Foods and Sam Shukoff from Lady Edison. Enjoy the rest of Mercantile.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank
you guys.
So much.
And this is Heritage Radio Network on Tour. I'm Hannah Forden here at Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. Thanks again to Good Food for having us and to the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage possible. Thanks.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.